Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us again. I kind of want to describe the physical setting here. We are observing the President's request that we not have more than 10 people in a room, and so we are in this room in the Capitol building, and the press corps are in two separate rooms, and I'm pointing because I'm looking directly at pictures of them in each of the two rooms. So, for 52 years, my wife Fran has been the rock of our family. Fran I met in first grade. That has the advantage or disadvantage that she knows a lot about me and knows all my grades throughout the years. We have eight children, 24 grandchildren. And so I've asked Fran, as we really enter a time that none of us have ever experienced in Ohio, as we enter that period of time and are in that period of time, I've asked Fran to kind of share with Ohio families what she is doing with our family to kind of get us through this and to keep us together as a family. So, Fran.
Thank you, Mike. You know, this really is, you know, as Mike said yesterday, it's no ordinary time, and it's certainly no ordinary time for families. But I see Ohioans coming together all across the state to help each other. You know, when it was first announced that the schools were closing, you know, what I worried about is, how are those kids going to eat? You know, are they going to get food since they won't be going to school? But immediately, leaders and volunteers jumped into action in communities all over the state. And within 5 days, 350 schools opened doors to provide meals. You know, because of social distancing, you know, we have to figure out kind of new ways to feed the kids. A couple of examples in Washington Courthouse. For their summer feeding program, they have what they call the Big Blue Bus, and it's a bus that they've outfitted to take meals to different places in town to feed kids. Well, so they've brought that Big Blue Bus out now, and they're using that to get food to the kids for their school meals. In Dayton, they're doing kind of a consolidated meal pickup. So on Wednesdays, kids can go to their school and pick up a bag that has enough food for 5 days. East Cleveland, the volunteers and the community leaders came together, you know, beside the school staff, and they're preparing bags of food, and so they're just making sure that each kid gets to eat. So I think that's such an important thing that we had to do to make sure that these kids were still getting their food. But there are a lot of things that families can do and that we're trying to do, you know, in our family. You know, one of the things that we love and that I encourage all parents to do is to read to their kids. Last week I started reading the Little House on the Prairie series to one of my granddaughters, and it brought back a lot of memories for me, and she was pretty fascinated by it too. This past year, one of the main things that I've been concentrating on is setting up the Imagination Library in Ohio. And for those of you who don't know, this is a free book in the mail to every child every single month from the time they're born until they turn 5 years old. So I encourage you, if you haven't signed up your child yet, we hope you will do that. It's ohioimaginationlibrary.org to sign them up. We have about 75 counties it's available in, and just a few more counties to go. But if you go to that website, you can sign up, and just as soon as it's available in your county, you will start getting the books. So we hope you'll take advantage of that. One of my favorite things over the years to do with my children and my grandchildren is to cook with them. And this is, I think, a great opportunity now, since we all have to eat, anyway, to cook with your kids. My granddaughter Jean helped me make some Play-Doh for her little brothers, and it's sort of a fun thing that you can do at home with just basic pantry items, you know, salt and flour and water. And so I actually posted that recipe on my Facebook page. So if you wanna check that out, you can do that. It's a very simple recipe, and I think we've posted it at facebook.com/FranDeWine, or you can also find it at FranDeWine on Twitter. I showed my granddaughters Izzy and Jean also how to make noodles. And so tomorrow I'm going to make some more chicken and noodles. You know, it's something that my grandmother taught me to make years and years ago. It was sort of her signature recipe, and it's very easy. So, you know, tomorrow I'll put the recipe up, and you can work with your kids and make some noodles. It's just a fun thing to do. You can make them into chicken and noodles, or the last time we tried, we made some fettuccine out of them. But just little things like that, I think, can help bring families together. So, you know, just go in the kitchen and cook with your grandkids or your kids. When I make my chicken and noodles tomorrow, I'm also going to take some to my mother, who is 93 and living in her own home. You know, but I think it's so important. You know, she really does feel isolated now because the kids can't come to see her. And so, you know, I regularly take food to her, and my sister takes very good care of her. But, you know, what I'm trying to do right now is to help her learn how to FaceTime with the kids. Some of my grandkids who love to FaceTime with me, you know, I'm teaching them to FaceTime with Grandma Strewing. And it really brings great joy to her and keeps her from feeling so isolated. So I think, you know, even with the older members of our family, if we can use some technology to bring together, even though we're doing the social distancing, you know, it's just so important that we make them feel part of our family still. There's lots of educational things we can do with our kids. You know, Scholastic has opened up a great program, so you can check that out on different things that you can do with your kids. It's a good time to, you know, in a couple of weeks you'll be able to prepare your garden, clean your closet, walk your dog. You know, I heard that some of my grandkids were playing baseball in the backyard a couple of days ago. My son-in-law is teaching himself how to play the guitar. I saw a list of books that my son decided that, you know, you really need to read that he put up on Facebook. So there's all these things that you have. Maybe you were waiting for a snow day to do some project like create an album or organize your pictures. You know, we can use this time, and we can do it, you know, with everyone who's in the house with us. You know, use this time to help everybody to become closer together and share fun things and make it fun for the whole family. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon again, everyone. Thanks, Fran, very much. I want to talk at first today about testing. I want to clear up any confusion that Ohioans may have about whether they should get tested or not. I was on a call this morning, and the question was about testing, and we get those questions a lot. Let me just repeat what Dr. Acton has said, and this is true all the way across the country. This is not unique to the state of Ohio, but testing is limited. Our testing capacity is limited. It will, in all likelihood, remain limited. But we should also understand that if you're worried about a family member or you're worried about yourself, that you may have the virus, and you feel like you need to get tested. I understand that, and I think we all understand that concern. But I really would ask my fellow citizens in Ohio not to fixate on testing. This is understandable. But if we have said all along, the vast majority of Ohioans who have symptoms do not need to get tested for the coronavirus. The vast majority of Ohioans who have symptoms do not need to get tested for this. If you're feeling symptoms of what you think might be this virus, you should act like you have it, which simply means that you should stay home, that any member of your family, anybody who lives with you in that home, should also stay home. The best thing you can do, the most responsible thing you can do, the most heroic, the most patriotic thing that you can do is to stay isolated at home. Your family members, everyone who lives in your home, as I said, needs to stay there as well. The vast, vast majority of people who get this will be able to stay home. They will not need to be hospitalized. Of course, if your symptoms worsen, call your health care provider, whoever that might be. And if you find you're having any difficulty breathing, then obviously you need to go right away to the emergency room. While most people will, in fact, be able to remain at home, the most important thing we can do right now, and I really can't stress this enough, is to reserve the limited tests that we do have for those Ohioans, our fellow citizens, who are the sickest and who are the most at risk. We must reserve those for those individuals. And let me talk for a moment about why that's so very, very important. Keeping our health workers, our doctors, our nurses, our first responders, others involved in the healthcare system, keeping them healthy is absolutely essential so that they can take care of the rest of us. We have to have them healthy. We have to have them so they can be on the job. The doctors tell us that they want to test the sickest people, those who are exhibiting the most severe symptoms, so that our healthcare workers can best utilize their very limited personal protection equipment. They need to know who has the virus so that they can use the right protective equipment to keep the virus from spreading to other vulnerable patients in that hospital. And it's very, very simple. They need to know the patient in room 202 has the virus. And so reserving it for those people who are sick, who go into the hospital, knowing who is coming into that hospital who has the virus is vitally important. Efficiently using our limited testing will enable our scientists and disease detectives to better understand the spread of the virus. This has to be done in a very targeted, methodical way, which means deciding who is tested needs to be determined by the doctors and the scientists who are really at the front lines. It's just so very, very important. And here is the truth. With or without a test, the virus is here. It lives among us. And we must be at war with it. And we're at war with a very, very dangerous and lethal enemy. This virus's mission is to reproduce. And for it to go from person to person, it needs our help. It cannot do its damage without us. We become the enablers. We become the ones who make it able to jump from person to person to person. We have it within our own control how fast this spreads and how widespread it spreads. We have within our hands not only our own safety, but the safety of our fellow citizens. This enemy is dangerous, it is relentless, and it is using us. It is using us as its host, and it is using us to survive, to multiply, to go from person to person. But we do have it within our ability to fight back. When you stop moving, when you stop moving, when I stop moving, it stops moving. It can't reach someone else. So each one of us must do all we can to limit our exposure, and we must stop enabling this enemy. We must stop it from surviving, multiplying, and thriving. Every one of us is in this fight. We don't need to go into the battlefield ourselves. We simply need to stay at home. We simply need to have space, no matter where we are, between us and other individuals. We certainly, as Fran indicated, need to stay socially connected, but physically separated. Every single one of us, every single one of my fellow Ohioans matters. And we will get through this. And we all want to get through this together. As I said yesterday, we all want to be here for next St. Patrick's Day. We all want to be able to celebrate. We can get through this together. We can stay healthy, and we can get through it faster. But it's really on us. It's on us, each and every one of us. And it will take each one of us, certainly, to win this battle. Our goal every single day must be to stop the spread, slow it down, flatten that curve that we've talked so much about. I ask each and every one of you to help slow this thing down. I'm announcing some additional steps that will help. And let me go through these. The Bureau of Motor Vehicles has about 1 million people that go through their doors throughout the state of Ohio to all the BMVs each and every month. That's an opportunity for us to slow this down. Therefore, we'll be closing. At the close of business today, we'll be closing 181 BMV deputy registrar locations. Five of these will remain open because they are essential. And you're going to hear me talk as we move forward in the next several days about things that are essential. We should only be doing those things that are essential for the health and welfare of the people of the state. Our transportation system is important. We have to keep moving the food. We have to keep moving the medical supplies. Therefore, five of these facilities will remain open to issue commercial driver's licenses, CDLs. They will be open for the renewal of those CDLs, as well as the issuing of the licenses for the CDLs. All other services will be online or by mail, or they'll simply be paused. Also, 52 driver examination stations will close. We will be asking the General Assembly to pass legislation that will grant a grace period for people who cannot renew their license. In the meantime, we are asking all law enforcement in the state of Ohio, and I am instructing the Ohio State Highway Patrol and asking all other law enforcement to not issue tickets for someone who has, in fact, an expired license, which would be due to the fact that from the close of business today, they cannot get a renewal. We're asking, and we will be ordering at the close of business today, that all barbershops, hairdressers, nail salons, spas be closed. Tattoo parlors as well. Let me talk for a moment about our libraries. Our libraries can be essential and are essential parts of our community. We are not ordering today the closure of our libraries. We're going to leave this up to each individual county, each individual library. We would ask them, however, to deliver the services, as many of the services they can, in a way that does not put people together, the social distancing. If they're in a situation where they have a room and people are crowded in that room, that has to stop. We're going to let them figure out how to distance people. Some libraries, I believe, will close from talking to them, and we'll try to deliver some of the services on a curbside basis. Again, our goal is social distancing, putting distance between people. Let me now speak to every business in the state of Ohio. Retail, manufacturing, service, any business in Ohio, any nonprofit, any other place where people, employees, show up. We are asking them, beginning immediately, to take the temperature of every single employee every single day before they come to work. Second, we're asking them to be very, very aggressive in regard to cleaning surfaces, in regard to having the availability of soap and water, the availability of hand sanitizers. These are things that businesses can do, and they can do immediately, and we know that many of them are already doing this. We also ask them to be vigilant. If an employee is sick, certainly if an employee has temperature, send that employee home. The temperature check is not perfect, but it certainly is one way to screen individuals out, the employees who come in, and not have them there during the day as customers come in and also infecting the other employees. Let me talk now about our National Guard. It seems that there cannot go a day by when I don't get a call about some rumor about the National Guard. Let me just be very, very clear. When the National Guard is going to do something, you will know about it. The National Guard, sometimes people think of calling out the National Guard means that they come and they have guns and they're going to do some military operation. Please understand that the way the National Guard is usually used in the state of Ohio and other states is to help us, assist us, not necessarily in that manner. National Guard is called out sometimes in floods. In some cases, they're called out to be of help in regard to tornadoes. They have lift capacity. They have transport capacity. They can do many, many, many wonderful things. Just as a couple of examples, the National Guard will be helping hospitals erect tents. One of the things that you're going to see in front of our major hospitals are tents. These tents will be there so that they can isolate patients or check patients. They'll need more space. Hospital will determine how that tent is used, but we've received requests from hospitals. I talked to General Harris this morning Dr. Acton and I did, and they have tents, and they have certainly have the ability to erect those tents. And so you will be seeing that. We've received a request from food banks just to give assistance by the National Guard. They will be doing that. So that's the type thing that you're going to see the Guard do. If there's a change in that, this is really, quote, civilian work. This is work where we can take the expertise and the equipment that the National Guard has to help us as we go through this. Lieutenant Governor Houston and I both received a text picture today, and I won't talk about where it was from, but what it reminded both of us is that even if you're doing volunteer work, even if you're doing the Lord's work, you're doing important things, please observe the no congregating rule. This was a picture in a room, and the people were doing great work. They were volunteering, but they were together. And there was a bunch of people in a room. So even if you're doing important work, still observe that distance. That is very, very important. Again, to our businesses. We have employees who are going in every single day. Please, please check them. Please make sure that you're complying with what I'm saying today. It's so very, very important for their safety. And again, all of this comes back to separation. As I talk to people, I get a lot of emails and I get a lot of text. And I think Ohioans are really beginning to understand where we are, but and what they have to do. But it's also clear to me that some of our fellow citizens do not really understand it. They don't really get it. This is a crisis that you have never seen in your life, and I hope you will never see again in your life. But we have to get through this. And I'm calling on every Ohioan, when you're going into a situation where you have the potential to spread or to obtain this virus, it is very, very dangerous. This virus is, as we have said, we believe is twice as contagious as the flu. It is 20 times as deadly. It is coming after us. And we have to take whatever action is necessary to preserve lives of the people of the state of Ohio. I'm going to ask Dr. Acton now to come up and to talk a little bit about the testing and other things and really kind of give you all a report of where we are at this point in Ohio. Doctor.
Thank you, Governor. Good afternoon, everyone. And I also want to thank First Lady Fran DeWine. She knows that books are something that are very near and dear to me. Some of you know my story and that I had a pretty rough childhood, and I've been thinking a lot about the kids who are out of school, because for me, summers were a really long time, and this is like a big summer vacation. And it was the books that made all the difference and gave me a sense of life being different than the way I knew it. And so I think those books are important, whether in our little free pantries in our neighborhoods or how we do that, you just wipe them off. I think they're gonna help a lot of us through this time. So thank you for the work you do. And I wanna start off with a little information about our cases. And as I've said, I'm gonna tell you some very important things about the history of how we came here today. I know we've all been waking up to the situation we face. It dawns on us, even those of us who have been doing it nonstop since this began. It comes in waves. And so I'm going to take us back through, because I think there are some valuable lessons and some fallacies out there that I think we need to correct. But first of all, we do have 88 confirmed cases in Ohio. We have not had testing until recently, and as you're hearing in all the national news channels today, we have a shortage of tests. We are having to prioritize who we test. I will tell you why we don't need those tests to know the right things to do right now. But the fact is, our case numbers are only an example of mostly history. They're just the tip of the iceberg of what's actually happening in Ohio, and I will tell you more about that in a minute. Our age range now, and please understand, it is from 2 years of age, hospitalized two-year-old that we had, to 91 years of age in Ohio, with a median age of 48 and a half years. The sex is split. I don't think we're going to have a big difference in this overall, but 33 females and 55 males. We have 26 hospitalizations, some of those requiring ICU and more support, and we have zero deaths that we are aware of at this time due to coronavirus. We have at least 19 counties accounted for now, and some of those counties represent outlying counties. Those are our numbers as we know them. Let me tell you a little bit about Ohio, and I say this because it's so important. We states need to all see each other in the same boat. But Ohio, which was very, very late in our ability to test, is actually the seventh most populous state in this country. We are 11.7 million, give or take a little bit. Those are our numbers. We have major, major companies, global companies here. Myself, as a professor of global health, worked with the folks at Ohio State, the Ohio State University, who actually came up with the concept of zoonotic diseases, the disease like we're seeing here that leapt from animals to humans, that studied this concept of us, and they coined this term, one health. In this world, we are one world, and we are one health. And zoonotic diseases are actually the greatest indicator of that fact, and we're seeing that unfold right now. As far back as the beginning of this disease, which was the outbreak in Wuhan, when it was most known to the general public, was December 31st. And I heard about it right around that time in the first week of January on a call with some folks, a global CDC health folks, were talking about a zoonotic disease and what was going on in the market in Wuhan. I don't know if everyone knows, but the state of Ohio is actually a sister state with the province of Hubei. So we have all these businesses who are doing business all over in China, and we also have our universities. And at the time, it was the beginning of spring term for the Ohio State University, and we have some of the largest number of public and private universities. Many people from the coast send their kids here for our small liberal arts colleges. And so we were having many students and faculty who had traveled. We had Chinese American citizens and others going back home for Lunar New Year. And we had, you know, many faculty coming back, students who had traveled abroad. And it was January 15th, that we had the return to the U.S. and the symptom onset of U.S. case number one. Actually, on the 13th, we had U.S. case number two had returned. And so we actually began rolling out our pandemic planning at the Ohio Department of Health around that time. We began to use our pandemic plan. And that first case in Japan was January 16th. On January 17th, the CDC published a HAN, a health advisory, where it gave the very first people under investigation definition that our epidemiologists began to use. And it was a very strict definition by fact. It was the symptoms of people who were in Wuhan City, travelers. This is not uncommon. I want people to understand this is not quarterbacking, you know, after the game. This is just the facts. We were understanding this virus as it unfolded. But you have to understand our very first sense of a case, while we already had travelers, was people related to this market and to Wuhan. January 20th, the Washington State confirmed case number one. U.S. case number two was identified by the PUI. The first case in South Korea was known. In CDC, Chicago confirmed the U.S. case number two. We saw our first cases in France. This is January, late January. Our first case in Canada, our first case in Australia. January 27th was the first case in Germany. And for those of us in Ohio, We were first made aware of it as a population because we had our first people under investigation by that CDC case definition at Miami University. Two students, if you remember. And we sent our specimens to the CDC, and those test results came back not until February 2nd, because it took us that amount of time to send the case and turn around that. So we were relying on cases going through the CDC. All the while, we had people returning from business travel and conferences all over the world. On February 1st, we extended that PUI definition based on the CDC to Hubei province, or people with severe symptoms or hospitalization after travel to China. We again on February 2nd got our first negative results, and we began to test and actually tested 8 different people under investigation through March that ended up being negative. Travel restrictions were implemented February 3rd, and on February 7th, we got our first test kit from the CDC. Unfortunately, we were one of the handful of states that 2 of the 3 reagents did not work, so we continued to rely on CDC testing. All this time, we began to receive word, of course, of Diamond Princess. We had other travelers returning. We began to monitor. And in Ohio, whenever we had mixed guidance, we took the most conservative of the guidance. So as we had travelers return from the 11 airports, our local health departments worked with those folks. Over 250 people self-quarantined as returning travelers from China. For 14 days, they voluntarily did that, and we monitored them. We did our first tabletop exercise as a cabinet under our governor during mid-February. But of course, on February 26th, we saw the first market crash. And on February 27th, the governor and I did a press conference, really beginning to help the public understand what this virus is, and that was at Metro Health in Cleveland. And that was very important because we made a promise to you that we would tell you everything we know as we know it, and that's when our dialogues with you began. On February 28th, the CDC changed the definition of PUI again to people with severe symptoms with no alternating explanation. We began to realize that some of our cases that looked like the flu could possibly have been people sick with this. And of course, then in late February, we saw the cases on the coast of people, our folks from Ohio, returning from conferences like APAC and Biogen, the CPAC conference. And that's when we began to realize, even though we did not have widespread testing yet, that we were already seeing people in Ohio who are at risk. By March 3rd, and March 4th, we made the very difficult decisions, watching what was happening around the world, watching what we were seeing in Italy, watching what we were seeing from our colleagues and their advice to act early and not wait, because we knew 2 weeks would make a difference. From our colleagues in Washington, we made some very difficult decisions around the Arnold. And that began our look at mass gatherings and the beginning of moving into mitigation. We also, on March 5th, received our test kit. It took us the 2 days it takes to validate. We initially set up our kit on the weekend of March 6th, and on March 7th, we validated it 8th, and on the 9th, we came to you with our first positive 3 cases. So our ability to rapidly test, we began to see cases, and the additional cases have come since then. All of this is very important for me to tell you, because I think a lot of the decisions we're making now about testing and where supplies go, our reality is that we have limited resources, we have limited PPE, and we will never know, just through our cases that we have so far, we know we have widespread community transmission. And we have to assume, remember, our initial date of onset of symptoms of one of our known cases was February 7th. So we all have to assume that it is amongst us, it probably has been here. And if we decide to allocate resources just based on number of cases, we'll be missing the mark. Because in Ohio, we will not know those numbers. We may never know fully who all was exposed during this time. And right now, we are going to limit our resources and our testing to those who are hospitalized and our healthcare workers. You already know through the news that we have a shortage of swabs. And even though we ramped up our testing capability, we have extraordinary You know, we have the Cleveland Clinic, which is an international, some of the best hospitals in the world in Ohio. And they have done that. They ramped up their ability to test. But we have a shortage of these things. And so with them and with our other hospitals, we're talking about limiting our testing to those that are hospitalized and most sick and most at risk. For those of you at home, I know that us talking about taking this issue of testing in some ways off the table for most of us, the 80% of us who will stay home, is a very scary thought. But I can tell you this, even if you get tested, even if I were tested today and was negative, it does not mean I do not have the disease right now. It might just be too early in the disease process. I don't yet have the viral loads. And even if I do test positive, for me as an otherwise healthy person, it just, when I start having symptoms and I talk to my doctor and they do a good case history with me, they will tell me to stay at home. And whether I'm positive or negative, it really doesn't matter because, you know, as a doctor, most people who get the flu often are not tested. As a doctor, I might say, you know what, you sound like you have the flu. I want you to be at home. I want you to take the usual precautions. Keep yourself comfortable with these measures. And then call me if you have worsening symptoms. And that, everyone at home, is how most of us are going to ride this out. Our doctors and clinicians out there, we need to take those good histories. If we have suspicion of anything, right now we're already telling people stay at home. We should tell them and their family to stay at home, assume they might have this, and treat it with the symptom relievers that we have, our usual cold and flu medicines. Because, you know, we don't have medicine for this yet, and we don't have a vaccine. And again, most of us will ride that out, a very, very bad flu. But if you're riding it at home, I want you to think of these things. If you have worsening, sudden onset of worsening symptoms, you will call your provider back right away. They will talk to you. If you have difficulty breathing, if you don't have a doctor, then you should call the emergency room, and we can all put the number of the emergency room nearest to us, the hospital that we would go to, nearby. You call them and let them know you're coming because your symptoms have worsened. You're having that difficulty breathing, or you're having some other symptoms. And then after calling, you would go to the emergency room. So we don't need the test, clinicians, to know how to treat people. We just have to start treating them as if they have this disease. Hospitals, if you are taking these tests, it's very, very important to listen to me on this. We have the fastest testing either in our hospitals who are running the tests, the few that are. If you're a hospital that cannot run your own test, I'm not talking sending it out privately, but run your own test, you can send it to the Ohio Department of Health lab. We have a ton of ability to test now, and we can do it very quickly. We can turn that around more quickly than a LabCorp or Quest can of those hospitalized or people that are healthcare workers or frontline workers who have symptoms. If they're a healthcare worker that does not have symptoms yet, they do not need to be tested yet. This is for people who are symptomatic. We can do that for you because there is a lag time, and even the private testers are testing the areas that are most under pressure right now, Washington, the New Yorks, the Californias. The people with the most cases are going first, but we have the capability in Ohio at our lab to test those high-risk groups. So get us those tests immediately. Send them to the Ohio Department of Health, or if you're nearby and collaborating with a hospital like OSU or the Cleveland Clinic or the hospitals who can run the tests, you can have them work with you. Yes, as you've heard, children can get sick, and we now have the studies that are showing that our children can catch this. Again, most healthy children will do well, and you can keep them at home, but talk to your pediatrician. We do, again, have a two-year-old, and so, you know, it is infectious. We're all carrying it, so do talk to your doctor if you have concerns. I know that many of you are hearing all of this, and you're hearing all this news about testing. Our governor is asking you, this is a state of emergency. We are at war with an unseen enemy that is a virus. 80% of us will be fine, and the other 20% of us, everything the rest of us do is to protect the most vulnerable and help our healthcare system prioritize our resources well. We will get to the other side of this, and we will stick with you every step of the way and give you guidance. Do not be afraid if you cannot get a test. I want you to treat this like a very bad flu and use your common sense, and I want you to listen to our governor, and we will come to you every day and talk you through what is ahead, and we will do this together. Thank you.
Well, after that, I felt like I got some great advice from my doctor and my mom and dad, and we better listen, right? Don't be like that teenager that thinks that they know it all and then lives to regret it. So one of the things that the governor has promised that we would do is be open about the process on how we come to the decisions we make. And I know that there have been a lot of actions taken that for health reasons have created some economic disruptions. And I want you to know that we don't do this isolated from talking to the people who are in these industries and in these businesses across the state. For example, the governor announced the closing of salons and spas and the like today. We talk to these folks. They ask us in many cases to make these decisions out of safety and health reasons for their own employees. And every day, every morning, we have a round of calls with business and industry leaders in different sectors, from manufacturers to the construction industry, restaurant and hospitality. This morning, we talked with apartment owners about making sure that we have a strategy so that we can take care of people who are affected by the economy as it is and making sure that they have housing and shelter. We talk to realtors, we'll be talking to recorders, mayors, people like that. I do want to say that I was on one particular call today with the banks and then later the credit unions, and they wanted me to provide some reassurance. Don't panic. Your finances are safe. These institutions are not going to be closed. You don't need to go to your bank or your credit union to make a large cash withdrawal. Either their facilities physically will be open, their drive-throughs, their ATMs, their online services. They're all making sure that the financial services that you rely on are going to be there, and they emphasized the need to do that, to not panic. We have talked with mortgage lenders and banks, as I mentioned. It was great to see that the Federal Housing Finance Authority came out with guidance today to suspend foreclosures and provide forbearances, and we're working on all of those kinds of issues to accommodate people who are going to be challenged by the economy. But call or contact these businesses or lending officials to get the information that you need that's specific to you and your case. Let me add that Governor and I were on a call today. It was a fascinating call with CEOs who have global operations, many of whom who went through this in China already, went through this or are going through this in Italy. And one of the things, the governor touched on this, but I feel the need to emphasize it. You have to help us help you with this. You have to take the precautions in the workplace to make sure that there is not community spread in the workplace. There are many businesses. You can't possibly imagine the number of businesses that are involved in the supply chain for food, transportation, healthcare services and products, and we want to keep those businesses healthy and thriving, literally and metaphorically. And so we want you to make sure that you're taking those precautions that the governor outlined a little earlier. In addition to the things that the First Lady gave that you can do while you're at home, let me add the census. We're taking a census this year. It is available at my2020census.com. Help Ohio, make sure that you're being counted and that's one thing that you can also do. I want to give an update on unemployment compensation. Right now, this week alone, we've had 78,000 requests for unemployment. Put that in perspective, 2 weeks ago we had about 6,500. That's the 78,000 numbers is basically just 3 days into the week. That online service, unemployment.ohio.gov, is available for you. But also know this, there are many businesses who are laying off, but there are some businesses that are a critical part of the supply chain who need you, that are in transportation, the food industry, others who are medical devices, services, that are overtaxed with the demand for what they're doing. Please make sure that you know that those options are out there and available too. I want to conclude with one final item. The Small Business Assistance, or the Small Business Administration designation for Ohio as a disaster state has been filed. We believe that soon that will open up opportunities for businesses in Ohio to get that relief. And you can find those services at sba.gov/disaster. And we want to make sure that those businesses who are in need are getting the services from the Small Business Administration so that you can get the finances to help you get through this difficult time. As has been said many times from this podium, we're going to get through this. This will be tough. We all have to pull together. The most patriotic thing that you can do is to keep your distance from someone you care about or even someone you don't even know, because the idea of the community spread not only creates health issues, but it will extend the economic consequences of this pandemic. It is an incredible, incredibly important civic duty to make sure you're doing your part. So thank you.
Mr. Oddie.
Oddie from WHIO-TV. Today we learned that there is a confirmed case at the Dayton VA Medical Center, that person from Miami County. I'm trying to understand, and maybe this is a question for Dr. Acton, the accounting of how many cases come from which county. This person is in Montgomery, but they're from Miami County. Yet on your list today, on the website, it doesn't list any cases in either Miami County or Montgomery County. What gives?
So this situation is evolving so rapidly, Jim, that I heard of that case. I think the investigation is still underway, so I think it was going over our TPM. We've typically done our numbers at TPM, and as I said in days past, there has been some confusion of the people filling out the paperwork of, is this the county where the hospital was, or is this the county where the person lives? And so the movement of these tests coming in is so rapid now. We do suspect, and I believe if they haven't gone, the local health department and the folks there locally will be probably coming to you telling more stories about that case shortly.
Just as a follow-up, are you aware of any other cases in Miami County where this one originated, specifically to nursing homes, is what we're hearing?
I'm hearing that as well. So I do believe what we are looking at involves a hospital and somebody who is in a long-term situation, but that is all still being investigated. So stay tuned. Probably within the next hour, you'll be hearing more about that. And again, we have sort of a whole process and procedure that is going on with that epidemiologic investigation. The folks and the contacts are all aware, and they're all taking the appropriate measures.
Thank you.
Governor Andy Chow with Ohio Public Radio and Television's State House News Bureau. You talked about companies and what companies should be doing. What message do you have for workers and employees who might have a growing fear about the pandemic and their own health, but are still being told that they need to go to work and they're afraid of losing their job, but they want to stay home to stay healthy?
Well, they need to stay home, and their employer needs to have a liberal policy concerning that. We can't have somebody going to work. Look, as you can tell, we're moving forward. we may have further steps, but without today closing the non-essential businesses down in the state, you know, we want them to be very, very aggressive. And that employer should not want someone who is sick to be at work. And I think most employers do not want someone who is sick to be at work. So we're just asking them to be very, very aggressive. We're asking the employees to protect yourself, protect others. If you're sick, do not go into work.
So when this evolves, and as you're seeing it evolve around the world and country, there are some essential industries like our healthcare workers. My daughter works at Riverside Hospital here as a nurse assistant. And we need those folks to keep coming. It's why it's so absolutely important the rest of us are not spreading this, because we need them. And each employer in these essential industries will be working with the workforce. Even within those workforces that are essential, if you're sick, you need to stay home and you need to let your employer know. They do not want you coming if you're sick. But for the rest of us, those employers will be taking extraordinary precautions to keep you well while you're at work. So I think each situation is different for an essential. But if you're healthy, like I am coming to work now, I'm an essential employee, but I'm employing all of those measures we've been talking about, and my workplace is employing all of that to make sure to keep me safe. So stay tuned, talk to who you work for if you're in that essential thing. Remember out there, you know, this is not unlike a war, and you're gonna see heroic acts. There was a t-shirt made by the t-shirt company Homage, and they had a conversation with me, and I said something to them. You know, I'm the person you know now because I've been the first person you talked to. Before this is over, there are gonna be so many stories of so many heroes. And these people, and if you're a person driving that truck of essential food for the rest of us, you are a hero. And if you're healthy, you will keep working. I know you will. But if you're not, tell your employer you're sick, because it'll be important that you don't spread it to other people who have to keep doing that. And so we're gonna have to tell truth to each other. We're gonna have to keep talking this through.
Let me add one thing to that, Andy. Remember, if somebody is showing signs of being ill and an employer doesn't have a sick leave policy for you, you can self-quarantine, have your employer send you home, you can self-quarantine, and then you would be immediately eligible for unemployment benefits. So we've tried to build that support structure around that individual, so if they're not feeling well, they shouldn't work, and if an employer shouldn't want them there because they don't want them to spread the virus to other employees.
Is that for part-time workers too, or is that what's the eligibility for that?
I can't do it off the top of my head, but it's available at the unemployment.ohio.gov.
Thank you.
Mark Taylor with NBC4 Columbus. My question is for Dr. Acton. First and foremost, love your new t-shirt, super cute. My question, I want to talk a little bit more about testing. There's been sort of a local call and maybe even a demand locally and nationally for more testing kits. But what we're getting today is that necessarily, I don't want to use the word irrelevant, but can you expand on that? Because you're kind of saying just act as if you have it if you have symptoms.
Absolutely. You know, while there is a heroic effort underway to get testing out and ramp up our capability, and that will ramp up, it will continue to grow. Unfortunately, as you've heard in the news, there's some supply chain issues around the swabs. So the actual nasal swab that is used, the medium, the solution that swab is put into as the little kit that is then sent to the lab, we're seeing shortages of the actual testing supplies. So this is not just our state, this is around the country. You might have heard stories about one of the major producers of this is in Italy, so there's a lot out there in the news right now. But the truth is, I spoke with many of our hospitals over the last 12 to 24 hours, and they were running out of the actual kits that they used to do the swab. So they ramped up the ability to test, and they have the ability to run the lab, but they don't have the equipment to take the sample. And so, you know, we have some amazing businesses here in Ohio. There are some workaround solutions. I know some of our research universities are creating the solution, and they're creating some of the reagents here in state And that story will continue to change, but I think the narrative around testing has confused people at home. It's made them think that every one of us should be tested, and that every one of us should go in a drive-through, and that's just simply not it. It's still very, very low numbers of testing availability, and that testing is being saved for those highest at risk, hospitalized, people with pre-existing conditions, health conditions who are at high risk, and most importantly now, recently from the CDC, the guidance about prioritizing healthcare workers and our first responders. So I know there's a mixed message out there, and Ohioans, you know, I know that's hard to take, and when you're scared, you just think there's some test and it will magically tell you something. But the truth is, a lot of the test gives us knowledge. It's important in the hospitals because it lets them know what gear to wear, and we know we have a shortage of gear. So if I know you're positive with this, I have to use different equipment. So they need to know, and they need to know if a healthcare worker had it so they wouldn't spread it amongst the healthcare workers, because we have to keep those folks at work. But for the rest of us, you know, once I have symptoms, whether I test positive or negative, it's not going to change what a healthy person does, actually. So it's not really, at this point, as useful for the average citizen as it is going to be for us in the most acute situations. So we're prioritizing scarce resources.
Governor DeWine, this is Laura Hancock with Cleveland.com. We've had a number of readers write to us saying that their companies are not having them work from home, even if they have the kind of jobs and technological capability to do so. What are you going to do for companies if they're blatantly disregarding your guidelines, including the new ones today with the thermometers?
Well, I'm not sure I know about the new one today. But in general, we would again ask these companies to, if there's anyone who can work from home, they need to be working from home. As we talked about taking temperatures, I asked every company, every business, retail, take temperatures of your employees. So we're taking it one step at a time. Dr. Acton can hold this up, or I'll hold this up. You want to show them?
Oh, you're seeing the ubiquitous probe temperature taker.
So. Yeah. Show it on yourself how it works. Or on me, or I'm whatever. Gonna,
you've seen in the news.
Lieutenant governor or whatever.
They're able to quick read. You know, it's the quickest way we can do
doesn't
the
have
temperature
touch, right?
of multiple. No touch.
No touch.
Multiple
close,
people.
Boom. Fran checks my temperature every day, so yeah. Checks hers, checks everybody. So, yeah. But let me just finish. We're taking this one step at a time. If we're finding, you know, we can't get people to do this, you know, we're going to have to go to the next stage, which is absolutely close everything down unless it's essential.
Thank you.
And we're not, you know, we're not there yet. We may get there, but look, we have to have everybody. I just plead with employers, plead with employees. If you're sick, stay home. Every employer in this state should be taking the temperature of everybody that comes in, literally, every single day. We have to take these actions, but we can't do all this. Everybody has to do it. And I'm seeing people as I look around, I'm seeing people who are, you know, social distancing, people getting it. We're moving forward. But we have to keep moving. And there has to be this sense of urgency because we have a finite period of time to slow this down. That's why we've had to take the drastic actions that we've had to take.
This is Molly Martinez with Spectrum News. I first want to say thank you so much for doing this every day. It's tremendously helpful for us and also for really everyone in Ohio. My question is for the Lieutenant Governor. Have there been any plans for independent contractors, for tipped workers, and also of the 78,000 people who have applied for unemployment, do you have any data on how many of those have been approved?
I don't have data on the approval. I'll ask the team to get that. I will tell you that I was in conversations with Senator Rob Portman today about the package that the federal government is working on. We talked about 1099 employees, a big concern for us because if you're about getting them unemployment compensation, access to it, he was very encouraging that perhaps that the federal package would have the availability in that. And also, we will need federal funding to support our unemployment compensation package. It's just going to need it. If you heard Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, he suggested in the last 24 hours that the unemployment rate could go to 20%. So we're going to need, we're all in this together. We're going to have to be great partners with the federal government on this. They're going to have to be great partners with us to make sure that we have the resources available for these programs for the long run. They're sound for the moment, but we're going to all have to make some tough decisions at the federal and state level to keep them that way for the future.
Thank you.
Hi, Governor. Andrew Welsh Huggins with the Associated Press. We're into the first week of schools closures. You made it plain over the weekend that this could extend beyond the 3 weeks. And I'm wondering, at this point in time, as much as you're able, can you talk about what ending the school year would look like in terms of mandatory testing,
sure.
Students receiving grades, students moving on to the next grade next year, and then any provisions for graduating seniors. What would this look like, Governor?
Well, it's a very good question because Dr. Acton has indicated the best information that we can get is this thing does not peak out until maybe around May 1st. Now, we don't know that, but that's a pretty educated guess, and it may be off some. But if that is true, you can kind of extrapolate. That's the peak. So you know, I said over the weekend, I was asked, is it possible that kids will not be back in school this school year? And the answer, in the buildings, and the answer is yes. It certainly is possible. Certainly, it's obvious that the 3 weeks will have to be extended. And so we're working with every school in regard to, you know, encouraging them and trying to help them in regard to keeping the education going. I've also said that these tests are quite candidly the least of our problems at this point. And, if we get to a position where school will have to continue school. And what I'm saying is, you know, if it goes into the summer, you know, schools will continue to do everything they can by remote learning to educate these kids up until that particular time. You're gonna see them do that. We will do everything we can and make sure that these kids who would have been eligible to graduate do in fact graduate. Again, if we are at that point, I don't think anybody would be looking to try to do some testing. So we would be waiving that. We're not there yet. We kind of take this a few weeks at a time, and we'll see where we are. But parents should not be worried about that. You know, what I want parents and students to do, students need to learn to focus on their education. Parents need to focus on everybody's health, and the students need to focus on health as well. We shouldn't worry about tests. We shouldn't worry about other things. Kids who were going to graduate, they're going to graduate. There's no one here in this state house, Speaker, Senate President, the minority leaders. I can't speak for them, but I can't think that any of them were going to want to get in the way of a child graduating and moving on with his or her life. I can't think anyone's going to say that we have to do testing under a huge national emergency.
Governor, this is Ben Garbrick from ABC 6 and Fox 28. My question for you, every day when we have these briefings, you announce some new restrictions, ramping up the efforts to try and limit the spread of this virus. Can you give us a sense for what some of the other options you have right now? If this continues on the trajectory it's on right now, what are other options you have that Ohioans should be preparing for right now?
Well, we've been trying to signal to people what's coming, and we've been pretty open about that. I mean, I've signaled that, you know, we're going to need daycare centers that are going to be set up by hospitals because they're telling us that. That's not done yet, but that needs to be done. We've also signaled to people who have children in daycare that they need to figure out another arrangement. They need to have that child home with them if they can. If not, they need to figure out another arrangement. So I've signaled both of those things as things that are coming up. I think I also signaled today in regard to all businesses in the state of Ohio except essential businesses. We are not to the point where we're saying that they should close down. But again, we are monitoring this every day. And it is, I can't make any commitment that we won't do that, but it is very, very helpful. And we're all in this together. If every business, if it's retail, manufacturing, whatever the business is, that if they do everything they can to and it's in their best interest, obviously, they want a good workforce. And no one wants to see anybody get sick or see this virus spread through a company. But it's important for them to do everything they can to monitor their workforce. The temperatures we're talking about taking, we're dead serious about. We expect them to do that. We expect them to send someone home if they have a temperature. We expect them to do all the things that they really, in fact, need to be doing to protect that individual. We ask people to take their temperature in the morning. Take your own temperature. That's the first thing you do. That is the recommendation. Get up, take your temperature. Get up, take your temperature. But I think employers also need to have a check. They need to be able to do that as well and see how that is that's going. So,
thank you, Governor.
Dr. Acton, this is Jake Zuckerman from the Ohio Capital Journal. I wanted to ask if you can offer any kind of updated estimate for the infected population in Ohio. Is the Department of Health still estimating that 40% of Ohioans will be infected, and is 6 days still the estimated rate at which the population doubles?
Yeah, so some of the numbers, and it has ranged from 40% to 70%, are the amount of our population anticipated to actually get this virus over the course of a year. And that is the latest science. And I think you'll see those numbers kind of change, but we're assuming that. We do know from what I shared yesterday, the study from the UK, from the Imperial College, if someone could hand me. I see we have up here the symptoms. We'll touch on that, too, in a second. I know the governor has been talking a lot about, it's very hard to say exactly. Remember, everything was very centralized in places, like even South Korea, case 31, I believe it was called, the person that was in the congregation, they had these really distinct focal points of infection. But for the rest of us in the world, with all the travel we've been having from Europe and elsewhere, we've seen it seed everywhere. And so we're looking, this is some of the best analytics. I know it's what the White House is using in addition to some other modeling that they're taking a look at. But it's showing, Governor, you had said about the peak time. If we had done nothing as a country, and again, we're blessed enough if we all take the actions we're being asked to take to try to not be this black line of doing nothing, that would mean we had hit it really soon. And that's what sort of happened a bit in Washington State. It's just they were hardest hit first. But what all these actions we're taking are really lowering that curve. They keep lowering the curve for hospital capacity. That spreads out actually when the peak will be. So the better we are, the actual peak will be later. But that's good because that means we'll have a slower trickle into our healthcare system. And that puts, that keeps stretching the date out of when peak number of cases would be estimated now, mid, maybe even late May. I know in the news today we're seeing, some modeling that's saying this is a long haul. And you'll hear some, I'll talk more about surges and other things in days to come. And you have to, these measures, we're all gonna do this together as a country, but we'll do this in a very distinct way. One of the things that I could use some guidance from, and I would love if people, Dr. Fauci or Ambassador Birx or anyone could reach out. I've had some of my colleagues, some pretty well-known people from the World Health Organization, partners in health in places where they're looking at countries like Africa right now. There are some other thoughts that I'd like to have as a state with people about modeling. And actually the time at which we remove these measures and how you do that is very, very important. And so there are blood tests and serologic tests out there. There are other innovations that, quite honestly, those of us who do this planning would like to start having those discussions now. I think those of us who are always planning a few steps ahead. So welcome those dialogues, because I'm getting calls from people with ideas, but I really would look to our leadership to help guide me there.
Thank you.
Hi, Laura Bischoff, Dayton Daily News. Lieutenant Governor, the unemployment compensation rules in Ohio, I think there's a strict earnings test of $269 a week. A lot of people who are working in bars and restaurants part-time, maybe $10 an hour, 25 hours a week, they're not going to meet that, and they're still going to be out of work. Will the DeWine administration ask the legislature to change those guidelines, to loosen them up and make it so that people who are working part-time jobs and are out of work now will be able to get unemployment compensation?
Laura, all of those things are under consideration. We're moving as fast as we can to pull that together. The requirements are presently, the requirements for part-time work are 20 hours, or 20 weeks of work and $269 a week, I believe it is. I'm trying to do this off the top of my head. And all of those issues, issues are going to have to be considered as part of the whole package that we're going to talk with the legislature about eventually.
And if I could just do a follow-up that's completely unrelated, but I want to stick in another question while I'm here. There was some talk yesterday about the hospitals maybe leasing out hotel rooms or hotel floors for patients. I'm curious, a lot of the hospitals, major medical centers, are adjacent to universities where their dorms are now empty. Is there a discussion underway of repurposing those dorms, which have access to food service, et cetera?
Absolutely. We just have we're very blessed in Ohio, again, that we have this outstanding group of hospitals, from the smallest rural hospitals to the urban ones. They're working in clusters, actually, to help each other. And they're looking at those things like, the empty dorms, facilities that exist. You heard mentioned hospitals that are no longer in use. Certainly in other states, they've had to use things as distinct as hotels to setting up RV parks and mobile, situations that were used in Washington. So it's going to be very distinct as we have it get more intense. It's going to happen at the local level, and often it'll be in a state as big as ours, maybe multiple local areas at one time. So you're going to see really nuanced responses coming from the leaderships of our mayors and our commissioners and the local health departments, looking at what the best scenario is given the situation on the ground.
Thank you.
Yeah, hi, this is Max Philby with the Columbus Dispatch. For the Lieutenant Governor, do unemployment benefits extend to people working in barbers and salon workers and things like that? And then separately for Dr. Acton, if you don't mind, you hear a lot of people talk about how we may become Italy. Is that true, or is it just something people like to say, I guess, for comparison's sake?
As far as people in barbershops or salons and the like, if they're an employee, it certainly applies to them. In some circumstances, they will be 1099 employees, or they're not actually employees. And in that case, that's what we're working with the federal government to help them qualify for. So right now, under current law, somebody who is an independent contractor does not, but we will identify, we're hoping to identify ways working with the federal government to find a way to assist them. Dr. Acton.
Thank you, Max. As I've said, we are learning from everyone everywhere in the world. Italy has a tremendous healthcare system, actually, and we're looking at what's happening in France, and we've looked at what's happened very closely in South Korea. Everywhere and everything that we can look at, we want to learn from them. We're looking at our sister cities here in the United States and what's working and not working. We're talking to each other. Believe me, we're all talking to each other and learning. This is not a drill. Some version of this is going to happen everywhere. And it'll look a little different in each community, but somewhere on the spectrum of what we're seeing unfold, it is what's coming our way. And it's why we absolutely need to take this seriously and work on it together. And everything, every day matters, and everything every one of us does will make a difference.
Governor, Kevin Landers, WBNS 10TV. You've just highly recommended that businesses start taking the temperatures of employees, and now it's going to create a huge demand and a rush to find these temperature gauges, which are likely not to be found. How are companies expected to comply with that? And for Dr. Acton, have you considered telling people coming home from spring break to just stay home? They've been in contact with people at bars and beaches, and do you think that would help? Thank you.
First of all, a number of businesses are already doing this. We had a call today, a number of businesses are already doing that. Look, we can only ask them to do what they can do, but we ask them to make every effort that they can.
Certainly, we have a lot of returning travelers coming back from Europe. We have people coming back from spring break. My in-laws are en route right now, coming back from where they stayed in Arizona. So, you know, people are going to come back to Ohio. People are going to come back from the cruise ship. We want them back home. We want them. We know we have spread here. Come home, stay home. That's the message for everyone, really, right now. So if you have traveled, you'll be coming home, and you'll be doing what we are all doing, and you'll be watching for signs of illness as well.
All right. Adrienne Robbins, NBC4. Governor DeWine, after seeing such a case in such a young child today, does that weigh on you on the decision to close daycares or not? And have you been in touch with DHHS with that decision?
I didn't quite catch the word. Does it what me?
With the case of a two-year-old testing positive for coronavirus, do you think about that when you're thinking about the decision to close daycares or not?
Sure. And we knew all along that a child can get this. And so, yes, we certainly think about that. Look, every new fact we get obviously impacts the way we analyze things. But it's not a surprise. This, you know, we expect people with the spread that we believe is out there, we expect children, adults, you know, to come down with this. Amy?
I just wanted to add about the two-year-old. The two-year-old was a known contact of someone else, so we actually know. Remember, we have people that we can tell where they got it from, because we know they traveled to an endemic area, or we know that they had contact with a known case. This was within a household. We should expect this. And that's why we're going to be kind of living a little bit in little tribes of our family. My family right now consists of a couple of my kids, grown children, and a good close family friend and of theirs. And we're going to live in these little villages, you know, and therefore, if one person is in your home sick, act as if everyone at home is sick. Just assume that. Assume you all have it and all stay home together. And we are going to spread it amongst our small groups. But if we're not out spreading it in the world, then that makes all the difference. And other people can be leaving stuff on those folks' doorsteps as much as possible. Thank you.
Thanks.
This is Jackie Borchert from the Cincinnati Enquirer. Thank you for talking a lot about testing. I think there is a lot of misunderstanding out there about testing. Could you talk a little bit more about the difference between the Ohio Department of Health tests, the private tests, and also who is supplying the Ohio Department of Health with their tests and kind of our general testing capacity at this point?
So the tests that we have at the Ohio Department of Health came from the CDC, and we have enough capability here. We're not near our limit. The last check I had was 1,500 people, but we're not even using that to its full capability. So we can accept much more there, and we certainly are welcoming those tests and getting them to us as quickly as possible. But there are private labs up, but you've seen that testing increase. That's the LabCorp, the Quest. We received actually results because remember, everyone needs to report their test results right away, all private companies as well, to the Ohio Department of Health as a Class A reportable disease. We've received testing from LabCorp, Nationwide Children's, Quest University Hospitals in Cleveland. They have their own testing because it's very easy. The FDA made it so that folks could get their own tests up and going, and the hospitals will do that. Theirs are actually very quick because they can do it in-house. Ours are like eight hours to run a batch. But when you send them out to the lab cores and elsewhere, the Quest, it's taking quite a bit longer to get those results back. Last I heard, a day or two, but I'll have to fact check that for you. There's another lab here, I see ARUP as well. That we have received one test result for. So the commercial labs are doing their best to get there, but the bottom line is we can't get the specimen if we don't have the supplies to actually get the specimen, and we're using a little ingenuity here in Ohio to try to make some of our own stuff. So thank you. Thanks.
Kevin Landers, WBNS 10TV. For the governor, it's my understanding that hospitals have begun discharging patients to make room for COVID patients, and apparently you received a letter today from the Ohio Council for Home Care and Hospice. Can you tell us if what concerns, if any, they have expressed about that? And then for Dr. Atkin, regarding the testing, can you tell us in terms of genotyping or CPR, CRP, what you're using?
Yeah, I've not had any conversation. Someone else on our team may have.
And I will defer you. My staff will get to you on the types. I, at one point, knew everything about every reagent and test, but there have been so many changes. I know some of the reagents are running out, so I'll have our lab talk you through that. I can tell you something I'm very proud of. Even the hospitals, Ohio State sent their folks to our labs to be shown how to actually do the assays. And as you've heard, there's a quicker way to extract the RNA, the high throughput. So there are some different, those are gonna evolve. And again, these are in a way little miracles. Again, we are rushing to make a vaccine. We are rushing throughout the world. Some of the best scientists are working to find out if any of our existing antivirals could actually work. Right now, everything we're doing is because we don't have that tool chest. We're employing all the tools we do have. But I mean, the abilities of private industry and public and our CDC and everything, all that full force is working, but we are limited by some of just the equipment and supply chains. And every time we hit a wall, I'm telling you, some of the greatest minds, the Battelles, some of the greatest private industry are out there thinking up new solutions as we speak. So, you know, that will keep moving on. But for the average person, you know, that stuff gets very confusing to hear about.
Governor DeWine, we've heard some complaints from many employers that despite the recommendations for physical distancing and that sort of thing, that some employers are not following some of those rules, and employees, particularly in call centers, for instance, are still required to work in the conditions that they are more accustomed to that are not adhering to some of these guidelines. Is there more the state can do to compel businesses to try and do their part to make sure that we limit the spread?
Look, we're going to take this one step at a time, and we're going to make the decisions that we have to make to protect the people of the state of Ohio. So if we see that the distancing is not taking place, then we will have to take action. Look, we knew all along that at some point we probably were going to close the bars. I got pictures Sunday morning about people. I saw people congregated close together. I had, I think, three or four texts or calls from all over the state that this was occurring. That tipped it. That was it. We had to move. We could not tolerate that. So people, you know, everybody's going to have to do what they need to do. So a business that cannot do the spacing, you know, is going to have to figure out how to have that person work from home. You know, they have to be able to provide a safe workplace for the worker. I mean, it's not just that worker. It's about everybody who that worker comes in contact with. It's that worker's family, and it's everybody who in that family comes in contact. So, look, we're all in this together. I think most companies are trying to figure this out, or they have figured it out. But, you know, when people say, what do you have to do? It's distance. It's distance. It's distance. That is the word. It's space. It's space. It's space. There has to be that, and people cannot be required to work close together, you know, at least 6 feet apart. And then you have to do all the other things when you got a lot of people. You know, you've got to sanitize, and you've got to, you know, you've got to be very, very, very aggressive in that. You know, take some of your employers and put them on the job of washing the, you know, taking the surfaces and sanitizing the surfaces. John?
Look, Governor and I were on a phone call this morning with, as I mentioned, CEOs who dealt with this in China, who dealt with this in Italy, and did not have to close down their businesses and did not have sick people in their workplace because they took the right precautions. So this can be done right, and employers need to own this and take the responsibility for it so that we don't have to take further actions. If people act responsibly, the employers of this state act responsibly, and their employees follow that guidance, we will get through this healthier and more economically sound. But they have to own it, and they have to take the precautions that are necessary.
Thank you both.
And I just wanted to add a small thing, sorry, about call centers. As an example, you know we have our call center, and I do want to apologize to folks out there. There's been such a response and such a need for information. Coronavirus.ohio.gov, always open. We have had, as we've expanded our call center, the 833-4-ASK-ODH. You know, we got to a volume that was so high, like I believe it was like the 800 to 1,000 an hour. People had to leave messages, so I apologize to people out there. I know they're trying to get diligently back. But we actually spread everyone out in our call center, as the governor said a few of these ago. And we actually are employing new technology where we're going to have people working from home answering calls as well. So, you know, I think all, as the Lieutenant Governor said, all businesses are adapting as we learn more and as we apply these rules.
Noah Blundo with Hannah News Service. I'm wondering what information you've gotten from Washington about your request to waive the work requirements that people need to get cash assistance or SNAP, and have you reconsidered instituting Medicaid work requirements given the situation and the shocks to our economy?
I'm gonna have to check on where we are with the SNAP waiver. So far, everything we've asked for that we have a decision on, we've received. I think that we are on all of the issues that we've confronted so far, we've waived the work requirements, and I don't think we've had a discussion about things that haven't happened yet. So we'll hold decisions that we haven't made or that don't need to be made right now until the time we need to make them.
This is Laura Hancock from Cleveland.com. Dr. Acton, is there a plan to report the number of people who have recovered from this, you know, just to kind of provide a fuller picture of how this is going?
So there is new guidance out there. Originally, you might have seen in the media that to be sort of done with your disease progress in Washington State, you had to have 2 negative tests. And actually, for those of us who stay at home, once you're 3 days fever-free without taking any Advil or aspirin or anything, you need to be at least 7 days from the onset of your illness. There's some guidance your doctor will be using with you, but most of us will get better, and then we'll be on the other side of it, and you'll be sort of cleared, you know, that you've gone past the time of illness. So you'll work with your doctor to know that time. We won't do a test on you to say you're clear. We'll just know that you're symptom-free and the right amount of time has passed. And we may never know. We may never be able to count all those people, but some of the surveillance and data we'll get ultimately will tell us a good estimate of how much of our population actually did have this. There also could be serologic tests that could detect that you had it. The kind of testing we do now is just showing the acute viral stage, and it doesn't actually, I can't go back right now with the equipment I have to tell you if you had it back in January, even though we probably are gonna find out that some people who had influenza-like illness that was negative for influenza or had pneumonia might have actually had something like this. That would need a serologic test, but So we will have numbers of people who go through this. Even our flu estimates, you should know the flu estimates we do. We have sentinel surveillance, and we make very great calculations of it, but we always feel that those are underestimates of what's actually going on.
This is for Dr.
Let me, I'm Let me just say something. You know, we learn from the people we talk to, and I'm always a great believer in trying to learn from other people who have had gone through something. And so we were on the phone call today, as John indicated, with some businessmen and women who had companies in some of the impacted areas. And they talked about, John referenced the fact that some of them really got through this without anybody, you know, what they said is anybody in their business getting infected, and they were able to continue to do that. One of the things that they said was that, you know, they took the temperature of people when they came in. So, you know, what we are recommending is that companies do that. Look, we're not going to issue a rule. We're not going to issue an order. But again, if the companies want to get through this, we're all in this together. This is not just an idea, but this is something that is very, very much recommended. And again, this comes from, you know, not only from talking to doctors, but also comes directly from talking to companies that actually did it. They were able to do it, and they got very, very good results. Now, that's not all they did. You know, they were very insistent that somebody who didn't feel good was home. They created spaces. They did more sanitation. So these best practices that we have seen worked, I wanted to talk about today. But there's no, you know, I'm not signing an executive order telling every company to do it, but it certainly makes sense. And again, it's based on what we have heard and what we understand and what we know actually does in fact work.
This is for Dr. Acton, Jake Zuckerman from the Capital Journal. Is the state or a state health department still contact tracing? Are we still in a position where that is within our reach, or are we nearing the point where that's just not feasible?
There is contact tracing going around cases, and that's where we're focusing all our energy right now. As you know, we discontinued following every patient under investigation with the extensive. It's very dependent on the situation at the local level, so I don't want to say that across the board, but by and large, we've extended that contact tracing. It's still very important. I mean, we still want to go after this virus, see who has it, and isolate it, and get that tucked away, but at this point, you'll see that evolving.
Thanks.
Hi, Laura Bischoff, Dayton Daily News. Last question. I was kind of curious, Governor and Dr. Acton, how you think this pandemic is going to change America years from now and when we look back on it. How is it going to change American lifestyle, our view of public health, the works?
Well, I think it will certainly reemphasize or emphasize to people the importance of public health. I have felt for a long time that we have not paid enough attention to public health. When I look at the problems that we face in Ohio, so many of the challenges we face have to do with health issues. So I think it's going to make us really look very hard at that. You know, I'm blessed to have a director of public health and Dr. Acton, who not only has a great background, she also has, as you've seen in the last few weeks, the ability to explain public health issues to people in very simple terms. She can explain it to me. So if she can explain it to me, she can probably explain it to everybody else in this state. So I think that's very, very important. I think that, as I mentioned the other day, though, after we get through this, and we'll get through this, but we need to have an assessment in this country about what we need to be able to produce and produce and rely on no other country, because we do not know when that supply chain will be interrupted from Italy. You know, we had a conversation today about something. Well, that comes all from Italy, or a lot of it comes from Italy. We know a lot of stuff comes from China. Doesn't mean we shouldn't trade, doesn't mean we shouldn't do the things that we do, but we've got to have the ability to stand up quickly or to already have in place a manufacturing base to supply essential things that we need. And certainly when you're talking about medical equipment and when you're talking about personal protection gear, equipment for doctors and nurses and healthcare people, we need to have that ability to produce that in this country and produce it even in a case, enough even in a case of an emergency like that. Doctor?
Thank you for that question. It's such a beautiful question, and I find myself pondering that quite a bit. she's going like this. You can't see her at home. But the fact is, besides my predicted baby boom, I think we're going to see a decrease of a lot of infectious diseases that we routinely see way too much of, and I think we're going to look at our infectious disease protocols that we all take for granted. Public health is so vitally important, and we go through these cycles through history with this field. But, you know, I've always talked about the fact that we live 30 years longer. My grandfather was born on St. Patrick's Day in 1900. He was predicted to live 48 years. He lived to be 84. But, you know, people like Thoreau, you know, died at that age of like 48. And almost two-thirds of that came from this vast field called public health, and it's an evolving field. Like, the epidemics we face today are things like suicide and opiate addiction, and it's ever evolving. So the way we work as a field and the technologies we have and how we interface with the healthcare system. I mean, I think we're inventing things in our partnership with the healthcare system that are profound and I think could greatly impact health everywhere. I think we'll see the diversification that you're hearing. I also think it's extremely humbling to all of us. We see the unity of things and our interdependence. Geezers like me will use technology in ways I've tried to avoid, and my kids have been trying to help me along with. And I think we have to face the fact that human and economic development are inextricably linked. They just are. And that when we are doing the kind of policy making we're doing now, it's like every single thing is interrelated. And I just think that's a profound thing. I'm chewing on that. We have been thinking a lot. Our mission, our value statement now, is creating the conditions in which all Ohioans can lead flourishing lives and contribute to their full potential. And we see that human and economic development. And when we do economic development plans, we have to be doing the social development kinds of internetworked things that make for the best workers, the healthiest workers, that bring businesses to our state and these new diversified business chains. All of it's linked. And I think we're going to learn a lot about that. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. We'll be back tomorrow.